Okay, good morning, everyone. Shalom Aleichem. Welcome back. Parshas Chayesara to go. Parshas Chayesara is a transitional parsha in which, right now, the past few weeks, we've been living the life of Avram and Sarah, trying to get into, you know, their perspective, their lives, being inspired by them. And in Chayesara, things change. We pass the baton on. Right, it goes from not just Sarah's passing in the beginning of the parsha, but also Avraham in a very undramatic way. Right, it's not no big deal or fanfare about the death of Avraham. It happens later on in the parsha. They both pass away in our parsha. And additionally, I'll just say add this: Rabbi Sachs, his yahrzeit was this past week, a few days ago, and he has an amazing vort. Maybe we shared this 2 years ago in Parsha Chayesara. He says that when Avram dies, Hashem promises him two things throughout his life: land and children. Land and children. At that moment when he dies, the Jewish people don't yet have either one of those. Right? He doesn't know whether his children are gonna last, right? He was promised not just children, but a great nation. He doesn't even have children. I mean, we know it's through Yitzchak, not through Yitzchak and Yishmael. Yitzchak has two kids when he dies, and we don't really know what's going to be happening with Esav. He dies before he sees that. And secondly, the land doesn't belong to the Jewish people yet. The Jewish people are a small little family at this point. So Rabbi Sachs says, like, where's the chizuk in there? And he says, really, all of our jobs is to do whatever we can in this world, and then we pass the baton on. We pass it down to the next generation. We can't, right? We're not going to finish it. We have to do whatever we can. And then when we're finished, we have to make sure that there's people set up to continue on our job and finish it up. And rabbis, I listened to an interview this past week from three people that worked very closely with Rabbi Sachs in his office. And he was the chief rabbi. And then at 65, it was known, he said, I'm going to retire. That's it. And then he moved his entire office to it. I think it took a staff with him. They're very close to him. And he treated them very well. And it was very, so great. They became his family in many ways. And then he felt like there was another thing he needed to do. And there was so much. He made lists and lists and lists of all the things that he wanted to accomplish in this world. He wrote a book a year, approximately. Sometimes he wrote two. And they feel, right, they mentioned this thought from him in their interview. Because they said, like, we have that baton in our hands. And we are now continuing on his legacy with the Legacy Foundation, with a lot of different things, initiatives that are going on. But that's important to recognize, and that's really what's happening in our parsha with this transition. So, Vayu Chaye Sarah Me'ashana Vesrim Shana V'Sheva Shanim Shnei Chaye Sarah. So much has been written about the repetition in our parsha, 127 years, 127, etc. Rashi tells us all about this. Kulan Shavin Latova. And then Rashi tells us the following. Shlakach Nismecha Parshas Misa Sarah Lakedas Yitzchak. Why is this Parsha coming right after, on the heels of the Akeda at the end of Parshas Vayera? Lefisha Al Yedei Besuras HaAkeda MeHasatan Mesa. Because it was through the news that she heard about the Akeda. Presumably she didn't know. Like, Avram, where are you going today? I'm going to work. I don't know where. Oh, it's bring your child to work day. Like, she didn't. Good idea. Good move, right? He didn't share this with her. I mean, you could debate that. Maybe he should have told her. I don't know. And the Satan came to Sarah and told her what happened. Kishishama. When she heard that her son was going to be slaughtered, Mesa. he died, she died before Kodim she gidla she nitzal, the satan in this variation, in this text, was going to tell him, was going to tell Sarah that he's saved, but that never came to fruition because her heart stopped in the middle.
Maybe they should have told her that he was saved first.
Yeah, so it's funny. I got a call from my the head of school at YBH on Monday morning. When it says Rabbi Shlomo Schwartz on the thing, that's not usually a good sign. I said, hello. He said, everything's okay. I just need a favor. Someone left something, whatever. But that's something we learn. But you lead with, everything's okay. Mom's in the hospital. Right? But she's okay. She's okay. It is normal, right? That's, I think it's like good etiquette. Sam, you're right, right? Good etiquette. And there is one medrash, fascinating, not talked about enough, where the medrash says that Sarah cried 100 cries. Okay. Jules, I don't know what math Mendy did. I was busy getting ready. But 100 cries. Maybe this corresponds to the 100 kolos of the shofar that we have on Rosh Hashanah. So we focus on Aim Sisera, the mother Sisera. That's quoted in Tosfos. That's a Tosfos in Masechet Rosh Hashanah. But there is a variation of the Medrash that says that she cried 100 times. And maybe that would be something we could really relate to. One of the Imahos crying, etc., about her children. Rav Matthias Blum, we mentioned him last week, in his Sefer Torah Ladas, quotes to Kehilas Yitzchak, who asks the following question. He says, what was the goal of the Satan with sharing this news to Sarah? Right? La'eza tzorech balo dia la'sara inyan ha'akeda sher mesa ayideza. Right? What was the point of this? What was the point of this? He says the following. The Yetzer Hara, the Satan, is Yetzer Hara. The goal of the Yetzer Hara is not for people to die. That's the Malach HaMavas. Right? You have to know your Malach, know your angel. This is not the right, this is not that person. So that's not, that wasn't his role. What was his role here? Why did he want to tell this to Sarah at this moment? What was he trying to accomplish? What? To stir the pot, right? The goal of the Yetzer Hara is to prevent us from doing mitzvahs, prevent us from connecting with Hashem, prevent us from achieving our potential. So very often, when do we meet the Yetzer Hara? We meet him or her, right? They appear in many different variations before we do something. Hey, you know, you really want to go to shul this morning? It's pouring outside, right? Last Friday night. Right? Do you really, you know, you really want to put some extra emphasis or sing? I think everybody's tired right now. Go. You know, you're really going to be patient right now? She said something. He said something really inappropriate to you. Let him have it. Let him have it. Right? So before, right, they instigate us or they push our buttons or they make us a little bit apathetic to life. That's one way the Yetzer Hara works, but there's another way. After the mitzvah, after things happen, right? We can also have regrets. We could say, I can't believe I used my time for this, right? You tell the high school, I missed the whole football game to Nava Mincha Ma'ariv. I missed like the overtime. I can't believe I missed it, right? Look what happened. I went to do a mitzvah and I missed out. It's called FOMO, right? You miss out. And that's also the Yetzer Hara, because someone can end up regretting doing the mitzvah itself. And that's what we say at Ma'ariv. Ma'ariv, we say, Vaser Satan Milfanenu U Mecharenu. Hashem, we daven that the Satan is removed before we act. And even after we act, we do the right thing, that we shouldn't have that regret. There's all Gemara and Kiddushin about regretting on a mitzvah. Toha al rishonos. That can literally uproot and take away It's a chus of the mitzvah. So by the satan coming here, what was he doing? He wanted to agitate Sarah so much that Sarah would come out, waiting like, you know, with her arms crossed, on the road, yell at Avram, let him have it, can't believe, like, and then Avram would regret that he did this. So that was his goal. So the satan himself did not perceive or see that this was going to happen, that Sarah was not going to make it after this, but that's where he was coming from. That is thought. Yeah.
So was it the time, but not the time for her? The bottom line is, we don't always think that. I guess someone was a big Sadegas.
Yeah.
That the son was coming to take away years from him, which he's supposed to die. Like that shouldn't be.
Right. So
it's
you're.
The freak out. I'm freaking. That Hashem let it happen.
So,
maybe Hashem did it so that Avram wouldn't say, she wouldn't be standing there, so he would say.
So, Rabbeinu Yonah, right. Most Mefarshim say, 2 weeks ago, we learned that Avraham went through 10 tests. We didn't learn it. We saw the mission inside about that Avram went through 10 tests. The Amad Bekul. So, what are the 10 tests? All the Mefarshim, all the commentaries on the Mishnah, Pirkei Avos, lists their 10 tests. And it's very fascinating to see the differences and nuances between them. But most Mefarshim are on the same page about what test number 10 is. What's test number 10? The Akedah. The Akedah is test number 10. Rabbeinu Yonah says test number 10 is Kvura Sara. So what's Kvura Sara? So some say it's that Avraham acted with midos to Ephron, who was trying to pull a fast one over him. And he didn't lose his cool. Others say is that Avraham, the same idea, that Avraham could have regretted performing the will of God with the Akedah because Sarah died as a result of that. Right? So very easily, right, Avraham could have blamed himself for his wife's death. Right, that's a very real reaction to life. If we only didn't go here, we only didn't do this, I only didn't introduce them to this person, then this wouldn't have happened. This terrible tzara, this person wouldn't have still been alive. I am not a Navi. None of us are Naviim. We don't know. We believe that Hashem gives us the time, right? And we have a fixed time in this world. And that is exactly what we have. That is exactly what we have. How that works, how that algorithm works in Shemayim, can't tell you. Can't tell you. I can't tell you. Yeah. Yeah.
That Sarah had finished her room. Because, like, you know, she supported him.
Right.
So her was just like that. She wasn't necessary.
What Yossi suggested, which is was brought with some ire from the crowd over here, is that maybe Sarah's tafkid, part of her tafkid in her world, was to help Avraham see his potential, which is true about each a husband and a wife. Is that's really a goal. Azer Kenegdo, then maybe her, I don't know. Look in the Mefarshim, see if that fits with that. So, yeah.
Same thing about Avraham. Once Yitzchak gets his wife, he sort of fades into the background.
Well, truth is, he really fades into the background. Yeah. Once he charges Eliezer, he really fades in the background. We learn small things from him. We learn that he marries Keturah and he has more kids, right? But it's very like minor within it. Just it's more informational. In the Torah itself. What?
The Torah does that somebody serves his purpose. Yeah, you don't hear about
them. We don't hear about them a lot. Yeah, we'll learn this about Shmuel, that Shmuel lives for a while, but he, and then like Shmuel died. Right? Wait, what happened? What? Right? So it's a fair point that maybe, there was something that was finished and maybe passed on, perhaps, or the roles changed. Yeah.
So getting back to my dad, that was what Yossi is saying, if you look at each word, each thing in the beginning of Chayasara, whereby you can make it be equal to 10. If you add up the numbers, Chaye, Sarah, also you can make it add up to 10. And she lived 127 years, which is also equal to 10. So maybe it's exactly what Yossi was saying. All the 10 tests were completed, and it was time to go.
That's going
to
be fascinating. I saw this at Gematria. So how old was Avram when he died? How old was Avram when he died? 175. 175. How old was Sarah? This we know. 127. What's the difference? No, what's the difference between 120, not 175? What's the subtraction? And 127?
48.
Thank you, Jay. Jay, you got it first. Okay. There's like a few second delay on the. So 48 or 48? What's 48? Okay, 498, good. But 48, Chazal say that's when he discovered God. So he had 48 more years, but really, what about Sarah? Sarah discovered God at the age of zero. When she was a baby already, she was on a higher level then, right? Rashi says this last parsha, that she had this nevuah, she had an innate understanding of Kadosh Baruch Hu, she had a higher level of nevuah than Avram. She saw God miyad, right? It's hard to learn from Sarah from that because like that's not natural for everybody else. Avram, so they had equal amount of years with God by their side. Right? That's a fascinating question. Okay. But Thomas Sarah Bekiris Arba Hi Chevron. Sarah dies in Kiryas Arba. I'm gonna throw out the question because this is amazing. Rabbi Yudin says all the time that there's no generation gap within Torah. And this is some bring this as a proof for the godlikeness of Torah, that the Torah itself is divine. Why is that? Because we, at all of our ages and stages in life, can be learning the same book as the kids in first grade, fifth grade, 11th grade, and on. And they're all learning the same book. And they'll get inspired by it. I'll tell you an amazing story. It happened this past 2 weeks in the shul. Two Friday nights ago, Noam Brum, and I'm called out by name, right? Yehuda and Ariel Abram's son. Noam's in third grade in YNJ. Our YNJ. And we've been recorded. And he said the following kasha. He said, at the end of Parshas Vayera, we see that Avraham finished the Akedah. Where does he go back to? Vayashan Avraham to Er Sheva. He says it's not where they're living. They're living in Kiryas Arba. Why was he going back to Be'er Sheva? It doesn't make sense. And in fact, Matamas Arba Kiryas Arba Hi Chevron. But Yaakov Avram Alpine Beso, and he goes, and Avram goes to Vayevo Avram. He's pulled us out of Kosa. So like, he ends up in Chevron. What's going on here? Does it make sense? Why is he going back to Be'er Sheva? And then last Shabbos at the Kiddush, Lenny Ice, who's a little bit older than Noam Brum, came over to me and said, "Rabbi, I have a kasha for you. I never thought of this before in my life. I'm reading the last Aliyah in Parshas Vayera. Why is Avram returning to Be'er Sheva? That's not where they're living." Rashi tells us, Rashi, the whole cheshbon, as to where they live and how long they live in every place for. He's returning to Kiryas Arba. And we know that they're living in Kiryas Arba and Hebron because that's just Sarah dies. I don't get it. I'm like, that is the beauty of Torah. That's unbelievable, right? What? Ramban, okay. What does Ramban say?
He says that you know, they live in different tents. But I think...
So the Malbim, so right, so I didn't see that as like an answer per se, but I'll say the Malbim, I really need to see a lot of answers on it. We should have addressed this. Time wise, right.
Because he makes more sense because otherwise.
Maybe the Akedah took place earlier, maybe this is a time frame. Right. Interesting. Okay, yeah. The Malbim says here, the Malbim's answer is very, very shot oriented. And the Malbim says, because right before the Akedah, Avram is doing work with Avimelech and Pichon. And it could be that when he was returning, he wasn't going back home. He was going to work. He had business to do with Avimelech. So the business was in Be'er Sheva. That's where he was doing work. It was near. That's near where the cities of the Plishtim were. And then on his way, somebody must have found him and said, broke the news to him. And Sarah died. And then he returned to Kiryas Arba. I shared this answer with, no, he's like, are there other answers out there? So cute. But if you have, if you want to look into this, please share with me the Ramban, and to me, please. And but the story itself about the Torah, it's beautiful. No generation gap. Okay, so Vayavo Avram lispod lasara the lifkosa. Sarah, he eulogized Sarah. What do you say? Eishes Chayil. He's saying Eishes Chayil to her. He composed Eishes Chayil. That's what he said. The lifkosa. So if you go back to Eishes Chayil and you read the words, they all connect to Sarah's life. And many mefarshim darshan them as related to Sarah. And how are they related to Sarah? The lifkosa. He eulogized her and then he cried for her.
Is it too eulogized, too cried for her, or he didn't?
Avram went to eulogize her and to cry for her. We don't know. Oh, everywhere. Okay, fair. Yeah, fair. So the order itself is a little bit off. The order itself, generally, emotionally, naturally, Lo'alenu. A very close relative, someone you have to shiver for, dies. The immediate, not immediate, but a reaction that does happen is crying. Afterwards, we eulogize and then we cry more. We can cry. It sounds here like it's a little bit like if you're going to talk about crying, it should be crying before and crying after, in the middle. What's going on here? So, I saw one very, very beautiful answer. Vayavo Avram lispod lasara. So people that were there, right? Because of course Avram cried before. What is this referring to? Is that sometimes a great person passes away. And great, I don't mean because they are on the front cover of the news. No, great. We know great people that are in our midst. And we know they're great, but their greatness barely scratches the surface. We hear about them. We know that they're good people. Then you hear the eulogies about them. Whoa. If only I could have spent more time with them. If only I learned more Torah from them. If only I had more interactions with them. If only I was, you know, in their sphere at some level. So the crying here is the crying for the loss for that we didn't really get to know who Sarah was until after she dies. Too often in life, we only get to know people after they die, right? If only I met them beforehand, why didn't I go? I should have gone. I should have gone to meet with that great person or this good person. I should have made the time to sit with them. And then you know what happens? It's too late. It just doesn't happen. And that's what the message is here. Vayavo Avram lispod lasara. And everyone knew about Sarah. And then they started crying that they did not have the ability to interact with her. They said, I'll do it tomorrow. Next week, I'll have more time. You know, maybe next month in the summer, that's when I have that freedom. And then the summer comes around and you don't have that freedom. We need to make that time earlier in our lives. That is the message of Vayavar from the Spoda Sarah of Lifkosa. Moving right along. Did I ever share the story with everyone about the stuffed toilet? Like, she was like, did he really say stuffed toilet? Yeah, I did say that, yeah. Did I share that story? No. Okay, let's go, you would have remembered, good. Okay, I'll share it right now. So, Avraham brings in Eliezer, his trusted servant, and he makes him swear that he's only gonna get fine people from the Mishpacha, and Midos, etc. All different reasons why. And Eliezer goes there and sets up a test, right? I'm going to be there on the side and I'm going to see who's going to help me. And we see that Rivka, the water comes up for Rivka. What's amazing is, we'll get to the story in a minute, is just, this is a quick vort. What impresses Eliezer about Rivka? If we were there, what would impress us about Rivka? That the water came up for her, right? The water itself came up miraculously for her. That's not what led to this choice. What? Feeding the animals, her midos, her alacrity. It was her chesed, her graciousness. What? Her age. Why her age? You and honey have to talk afterwards. Her beauty. No, but it was her midos. It was her midos tovos. You know, too often, I think we get stuck on and enamored by people's like mofsim. Look what they did. They performed these miracles. They were able to do like, that's not what should impress us about people. What we should learn from other individuals is their midos. And this was, we're building the nation of Klal Yisrael. We need the next aim, right, of the Jewish people. We're choosing Rivka not because of the miracles that happened so easily around her. But we're choosing that because of the Hermitos Tovos. Okay, Rabbi, this is from Rabbi Reisman has a book. One second. Rabbi Reisman has a book called The Pathway to the Prophets, which is excellent. Excellent book. And he tells the following story. We're getting there. It's in Rabbi Reisman. We're getting there. David's like, I was going to leave, but I want to hear the story. Okay. My friend's brother had lost his wife to an illness. This is Rabbi Reisman talking. My friend's brother lost his wife to an illness. And it's very difficult to be a widower with young children around the house. And at a certain point, he was ready to start dating. So he had a son in his early 20s who was also dating at the same time. So he was dating the father while the son was dating also. When the shidduch was suggested to the father for the first time and he decided to, you know, pursue it, his son asked him very, you know, it was an important moment. How do you go about dating in middle age? It must be so difficult. At my age, this excitement to dating, it's what I want to be doing at this stage of my life. It must be hard to do this at your process. He said, I know, I was wondering how I would approach this ordeal. And they decided to take a cue from the Torah. Okay. This guy said, you're right. It's really hard. This is very, very hard. It's not something I expected to happen in my life. Something I wanted to be doing at this time, but I'm ready. Mom has been gone for a while and I have to do it. And I took my cue from Parshat Chayisar. The Torah says when Eliezer went to find a wife for Yitzchak, he asked Hashem to give him a sign that would lead him to the right person. When he got to the well, he saw the water coming up towards Rivka and he realized that Hashem had sent him this sign, right? So I'm waiting for my sign. I will do the same. I said to Hashem, I don't know how this is going to work, right? He's shaving, getting ready, dressed in, I don't know who he's asking. He's asking his kids, do I look nice, right? And I don't know if this is going to work. It's going to be hard to find a second wife. Please send me a sign when the right one comes along. That evening, he phoned his first prospect at a time that had been prearranged by the shadchan. The woman picked up the phone and sounded very, very flustered. Like completely, you could tell sometimes someone picks up the phone, they're like not even there. Hello? You hear like the noises in the background. My friends make fun of me a lot because I have a lot of like background noises when I'm talking on the phone. Whether I'm like talking in the hallways in like the school or like my kids are screaming, if I walk outside. So so he's talking to this woman and she sounds very, very overwhelmed, very, very flustered. And she said, I have to apologize. I know that we were planning to speak at 8:30 p.m., but I have an emergency. I have little children at home, and one of them flushed a toy down the toilet, and the toilet is overflowing. All the water is coming up towards me. I can't talk to you now. Please call me back in an hour. Needless to say, he hung up the phone with a big smile on his face, and he said, "Is this a sign?" They ended up getting married. Was he capable of fixing the toilet? It's not in the story. I highly recommend this book. It's an excellent book. Pathways and Problems. Yeah.
It was by Sarah. The water came up.
Oh, yeah. That's why. Yeah, right. By Rizzo, that was the water came up.
Oh, that was it.
Yeah. Okay. That's a cute story. It's a great story. Hashem sent us signs when we're when we're not expecting them. This is an unlikely sign. Amazing. Okay. So Eliezer brings with him a few gifts. What does he bring with him? Good. Becca. Vayihi kasher kibul agamam mishtos. Vayikach ha'ish nezem zahav Becca mishkalo. A gold nose ring that weighs a Becca. Shmei tzmidim al yadeha. Two bracelets. Vazahat, which weigh Asara Zahab Mishkalah. So two gifts, right? One is a Becca, weighs a Becca, and one is two bracelets that weigh 10 Zahav. Now, what is that a reference to? So Rashi says the following. The Becca, the size of the Becca, the weight, is Remez Ashika Yisrael Becca Lugugumas. That is a reminder of the shekel every single person needed to bring. A chati shekel, parshas mishpatim, parshas shkalim, chati shekel each year for the Beis Hamikdash. Secondly, the shmei tzmidim. What do the two bracelets represent? The luchos and the asara zahav mishkalam is a remez to the asara sadibros. Okay, that is Rashi. Now, what's going on? What is this? What is the deeper meaning over here? So the Gur Aryeh was written by the Maharal. The Maharal wrote a super commentary on Rashi called the Gur Aryeh. It's really great. It's really its own commentary on its own, but it's really, everything's based off of Rashi. And he writes here, like, I understand the Torah, like we can get the reference of the Torah, the shekel, like what's Chati Shekel, like what's the significance of that? And what are these two things together? So he says the following. He says that it's very, very clear that what Avraham is looking for in this Yitzchak's wife was a woman that had impeccable midos. And that's what he was going to get. Right? And he specifically wanted somebody from the place where he grew up, because it was known that in that area, people had good midos. They were moral and ethical, etc. But he wanted to show that whoever was going to take over the mantle as the next mother of Klal Yisrael and continue on that path, is that just to be somebody that's a gomelet chesed and only gomelet chesed, that's not enough, right? That's not enough. The world is built on three foundations: Torah, Avoda, and Gemilas Chasadim. Right? If you're going to be a well-rounded Jew, you need to be somebody that is a Torah Jew and is learning Torah and is teaching Torah. Rivka, you have to learn Torah. If you don't know already, we know that we learn. She does know Torah, but that is the message here, and that is by the Tuluchos and the Aseres Hadibros. And the shkalim, the chati shekel, why do we bring a chati shekel? That money, that's like a tax, that pays for all the korbanos tzibor of the entire year. So that represents avoda. That represents tefillah, right? And so, Rivka, you're going to need to have all of this on its own, right? You're going to need to excel in all three areas: Torah, Avoda, and Chesed. And that was the reference here to Midos is number one. I think it's very important also. When you're choosing a spouse, Midos is number one. Torah and Avoda is very, very important. And we can't forget about it. But number one is the midos, and that was the reference, the message here, that you need to have all of these. Yeah.
Just going back then to the 10 camels.
Yeah.
So going back to Mendy's whole pre-Rabbi Markowitz math class.
Yeah.
With all the 10s.
And, yeah.
And then the 10 for the Aseret HaDibrot. Is there, I mean, Avraham didn't tell Eliezer take 10 camels. It just says Eliezer took the 10 camels.
Right.
So I'm wondering if, you know, Dafka 10, is there a reason?
So I think Rashi says it was very much pomp and circumstance. They wanted to show that there was a chashim of family. Also, but gemalim comes from the word gomel chesed, right? So maybe that was a reminder as to why they chose camels. As opposed to donkey, yeah. We see that Avram likes donkeys too, right? Okay, I forgot how many we're up to today already. We began with Rabbi Sachs, right? The two things that were promised he did not receive. What does that mean? We mentioned the idea about the tests. Why did Satan do this? The coming up of the water. Now the Torah tells us, Hashem beirachas Avraham bakol. Avraham was blessed. Everything. Yet everything. What's everything here? What does everything mean? Everything here is a big debate amongst the Mefarshim. Bakol, according to one opinion, the Gemara means that Avraham was given a daughter. Bakol is bat. He was given a daughter at this time, and that's having a daughter is having everything. That's what he says. That's what the Mefarshim say. Hashem beirachas Avraham. Bakol. But the Chazal say something else, that Avraham had a necklace. It's going by Babastra. Shemargolios Hayatolo Bitsavra Shlavra Vino. He had a stone, a special stone connected to the necklace. And anybody that would interact with that stone would be healed of their illness. What does that mean? So Avraham was like a necromancer. He was a magician. People just got healed by him. We call it back in the day a Baal Shem. Like, what does that mean? So the Netziv gives a very practical approach to this. He says what the Medrash really means is that Avraham had a koach and Sarah. He had a koach to give chizuk to other people. When people were going through a hard time, they were downtrodden. Things were tough in their life. They went to Avraham. Maybe he actually did have a necklace, but it wasn't about the necklace. It was that they went to Avraham and he was able to give people chizuk. Maybe people feel good about themselves. That they would leave his tent and they'd feel better, confident that they could overcome whatever challenges they were going through in life. Avraham had a koach hadibur, and he used his power of speech in a way to help and uplift and heal people. And that is Vashem Beirachas Avraham Bakol. If you could do that, then you have everything. Okay? Yes.
So, you know, I haven't gone over this for very long. Up until what point of time did people not get suffered and get sick in this kind of life?
The first person that got sick and then died was Yaakov.
Yaakov. So then what kind of suffering and sickness talking about here, like, is it emotional?
So, yeah, could be emotional, yeah.
Physical, right?
Because people weren't getting physical.
People weren't getting sick.
Right. So it means emotional, we're going through a hard time. Yeah. Last idea for today comes from the end of the parasha. So Yitzchak now finds Rivka. It's a very, almost comical, the way that Rivka sees Yitzchak for the first time. What happens to Rivka? Well, it's like that slapstick comedy, you know, like the love at first sight, and then as they're walking, like they trip on the floor. That's the way that Tzur HaMor, one of the more obscure but early Rishonim, describes this story. That like it was love, and she was so like she was love at first sight, and then she was blown away, and she fell off her camel. Now she goes into the tent of Sarah, and the Torah tells us, "Vayenachim." Yitzchak gets, you know, extreme nechama from Rivka coming into the tent that he calls Ohel Sarah, right? It's a tent of Sarah, and by Rivka's presence there, he's able to, like, you know, be back to himself. What is it about this, right? What is it? What did he see? What changed? So Chazal tell us three things. Yeah, honey, what are the three things? What? There's an anan kosher ala wala. The candles stay lit. Good. So when Sarah was alive, there are three miracles that happened every week. And very similar to like the Beis HaMikdash. There was a cloud, a Shekhinah cloud, on top of the Ohel. There was a bracha in the dough. And third is that the candles stay lit. May Erev Shabbos, Erev Shabbos. Okay? The Aarons like to try to do that every week. You do. So this is in honor of you. Ready? The Avnei Nezer says something very, very beautiful. That's right. This miracle seems to be a little bit superfluous. You could say that the candle stayed lit from Erev Shabbos to after Shabbos. Why did you need the candles to stay lit from Friday to Friday? Why is that necessary? What's the point of that miracle? What does that reflect about Sarah, right? The parsha is called Chaye Sarah, and many struggle with that because it's Sarah died. So the legacy of Sarah continues to live on. That is the simple interpretation of this, right, of the name of the parsha. So what was with the Avnei Nezer? Sakachev Rebbe says that what is the most challenging part about Shabbos is keeping Shabbos during the week, is spilling Shabbos into the rest of the week, is to maintain a certain level of equanimity, or a certain level of closeness, a certain pace in life that you don't have the rest of the week. You get that on Shabbos, but once Shabbos is over, it's like almost like, okay, we close that chapter, now we're back to being crazy and busy and running. And so we need to bring more Shabbos into our week. And he says that this is where Sarah Imenu excelled. She was able to maintain the Kedusha of Shabbos throughout the entire week. This unique Madrega of Sarah was symbolically represented by the candles themselves, that they did not go out, that Sarah was deeply rooted and connected to the Kedusha of Shabbos because Shabbos never left her. It was always Shabbos for Sarah Imenu, and that was true about Rivka too. When Rivka came into the tent, Yitzchak saw this. It wasn't that the miracles just happened and she was a good person and Sarah was a good person. No. She embodied, right, the very same, you know, midos and values that Sarah had. So she also was a Shabbos Jew. She was able to keep and maintain the Shabbos throughout the week. Yes.
Was it that when Sarah died, all those
miracles stopped?
They did stop. Okay, they did stop.
The miracles stopped.
Okay, yeah. Otherwise, you couldn't attribute it to a Rivka.
Correct. Right. Yeah.
So today, by the way, there are people that wake up on Friday morning and say, okay, what am I doing for Shabbos? And this is Friday morning. Other people wake up on Sunday morning and say,
what am I doing for Shabbos?
What am I doing for next Shabbos?
Right, so they do. 100%. Yeah.
Different, that's more perhaps I see it as, you know, technical. All right, what am I serving at Shabbos? Am I having guests? You know, that kind of thing. But to bring Shabbos through the week, I can see both sides. I can see that's really lovely, and if you can do that. And on the other hand side, I can also see does that take away from Shabbos? Because
you say if Shabbos is every day. Yeah.
A smokeaholic principal at Westchester Day School in America. And I used to say, I mean, like nonstop smoker, even in school. And I used to say, Rabbi, what do you do on Shabbos? I said, you can stop on Shabbos. You know, can't you cut back? I mean, there are people who wipe their cigarettes from the Havdalah camp. I mean, this is like way back. And, you know, the whole idea of Shabbos being special, where you know, you don't use your phone, you don't use your computer. And that, you know, I don't know, to bring that into the week is really asking a lot of people, and then I don't know if we take away from Shabbos.
But I think if you say that, because you're preparing for Shabbos, and Shabbos is always in all week, okay. And you're not going to go ahead and do certain things because you're always thinking about Shabbos.
Okay.
I think you can observe Shabbos the same way you do on Monday and Tuesday.
Yeah. I don't think Sarah served Cholent and Kugel every night for dinner because that would take away. And I think that's
but
special that we have. And there's a certain. And there are certain things that Shabbos brings to the table that we should have more of in our week. And then that would elevate our Shabbos even more, and then we'd bring more into the week. It would, you know, Shabbos is the battery that charges. It charges us in the week. It's Shabbos at the beginning of the week or the end of the week. It's a little bit of both, right? It's relaxing and also recharges us for the coming week. And that's what Sarah had. And Sarah was able to maintain throughout her life. We mentioned, I think more than five. It was okay. I came late. I feel like I had to give a few more. The great Torah today. So we mentioned the Avi Nezer about Shabbos, the Arab Shabbos. Shabbos, Shem B'Rechis Avram, Bakol. What does Bakol mean? It means the daughter or the speech. I'm very makbid on the daughter one. We had a great story about the toilet overflowing. The Yuchayei Sarah, what was the Satan doing by informing Sarah about this? It seems very, very wrong. And the beautiful shot of the Gur-Aryeh on the message behind the two gifts that Sarah gave to, that Eliezer gave to Rivka. Wish everybody a great Shabbos.